Daniel Kahneman wrote a book called Thinking Fast and Slow. He asserts in this book that humans are not rational beings at all. Our thinking is polluted by confirmation biases, which affect our ability to reason. Confirmation bias is the tendency to search for, interpret, and favor information that verifies our pre-existing beliefs and opinions. Nobody ever wants to admit this, but we all think we're right, and anyone who disagrees with us is wrong. So we search out information that backs up our point of view without caring whether or not it's factual. People who have their biases proven wrong get very rattled and are prone to take it out on those around them. All of us are susceptible to confirmation bias. I am. I want to believe that hydroxychloroquine helps people recover from COVID and lessen their chance of dying. I want to believe this for what I consider to be very good reasons. I know a lot of people who are in a certain age group, and I know a lot of people who have underlying health conditions, and these two things make COVID potentially lethal. So I look for information that confirms what I want to be true. I don't read opposing information because it disturbs me that it might not be true. People today are seeking out information that confirms their bias to be afraid. Lately, the CDC has been putting out information that might just ease our fears if we're willing to see it. At the beginning of COVID, we were told over 2.2 million of us would die. But in May, the CDC admitted that they wildly overestimated the death toll by nearly 2 million. Recent data put out by the CDC has a lot of glimmers of hope. Daily new cases of COVID have been declining in the last 6 weeks. 0.03% of Americans not living in nursing homes have died with, but not necessarily from, COVID. Nursing home COVID deaths comprise 46% of all American COVID deaths. Nursing home residents comprise 6% of the American population. What this math tells us is your chances of surviving COVID in a nursing home is very, very bad. The CDC reports that of all COVID deaths, 6% died from COVID, meaning that's what straight up killed them. The 94% who died with COVID had, on average, 2.1 other severe illnesses that helped kill them. They had what is called comorbidities. A combination of COVID and their comorbidities is what killed them. Some have misinterpreted this to mean that there are fewer COVID deaths than we are being told. That's kind of true, kind of not true. The data is a little more complicated than that. COVID was a contributing factor in the 94% who died with COVID, and it probably accelerated their deaths. Some stats are being brought into question because some of the deaths being counted with COVID are of people who have obviously died of other things, heart attacks, cancers, accidents, gunshot wounds. For example, George Floyd died with COVID, but not from it. We all know he didn't die from COVID. We saw him die on national television. And here's some more positive news. The CDC changed the COVID status from pandemic category to an outbreak category on their website. Pandemic means it's rampant all over the place. Outbreak means it's popping up here and there. You've probably heard it called in the news hotspots. 20 states still haven't reached 1,000 deaths with, but not necessarily from, COVID. The CDC no longer recommends asymptomatic testing, even if you think you've been exposed to someone with COVID. The CDC is no longer recommending Americans take into quarantine when returning from international travel. Now, none of this means that we should become careless. We should continue to follow the common sense guidelines to avoid catching and passing COVID on. We should continue to protect older people and those with underlying health conditions. But at the same time, this is really, really good news. But I'm worried that we've become accustomed to living in fear and that this hopeful data will be ignored. Fear has deeply changed us in the last few months. I know it has. It has deeply changed me. If we didn't feel fear, we wouldn't even know what to feel anymore. Some neuroscientists claim that human beings are the most fearful creatures on planet Earth because of our ability to think. Because we can think, we create fear in our minds. We are born with only two fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. So why are we so afraid of so many other things? Because as we grow up, we learn to be afraid of them. Studies have shown that babies are not afraid of what most other Americans are afraid of, spiders and snakes. When babies are shown pictures of spiders and snakes, their reaction is no different than when they're shown a picture of a flower. So they begin to be afraid of spiders and snakes when their mothers are shown the pictures of the spiders and snakes, and their mothers react and jump. Like moths to a flame, we are drawn to fear. This is why scary movies garner millions of dollars in Hollywood. Aside from a fascination of scary things, science tells us that fear is addictive. Fear triggers the dopamine receptors in our brains and sends out a rush of adrenaline. The combination of dopamine and adrenaline makes us feel physically and emotionally charged, and that produces a high. This high has a potential to be addictive. It's easy to become addicted to fear. Many of our behaviors contribute to fear addictions. If you watch the news constantly and search the internet for data to prove your right to be afraid, and you do all of this while drinking great amounts of caffeine and gorging on carbohydrates, you are a prime candidate for fear addiction. And then there's the media. Ugh, don't get me started on the media, because the media is in the fear-peddling business. In order to stay in business, the media must sell advertising. In order to sell advertising, it must attract an audience. In order to attract an audience, it must offer enticing news. The type of news that entices the most people is fear-based. Fear-based news attracts the largest audiences. This is why every news outlet ran numbers of COVID cases and deaths in blood-red banners on the sides and the bottoms of their screens, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for months on end. I don't know if they still do that. I have no idea. I do not watch the news. Our inclination to be afraid causes us to prefer bad news. Media companies know this and use it to their advantage. There's an old saying on television news, if it bleeds, it leads. The more scary the story is, the more likely we are to tune in, watch it over and over again, and make sure we follow the story to the end. Fear not only sells more advertising, it gets more votes. Successful politicians understand how prone the American public is to fear, and they exploit it to gain power. Fear is how the government has gotten us to submit to laws that take away our freedoms. Fear is how Adolf Hitler got the upper hand in Germany. Use of fear and intimidation is how BLM and Antifa are making the public support their crimes. Michael Crichton said in his book, State of Fear, social control is best managed through fear. The Bible is not silent on the topic of fear. It sums up how we are supposed to respond to fear in one word, courageously. Joshua was Moses' successor. As a military general, he led the people of Israel into the promised land. But before he takes his post in charge of a very unruly, uncooperative group of people, God had a message for him. Reading now from Joshua 1, 1 through 9. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, and you and all this people, into the land I am giving them, to the people of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, just as I promised to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, to the great sea, toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall cause this people to inherit the land that I swore to their fathers to give to them. Only be strong and very courageous. Be careful to do according to all the law that Moses, my servant, commanded. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may have good success wherever you go. The book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened. Do not be dismayed. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. I can only assume that Joshua is afraid because God told him to be strong and courageous three times. And once God told him not to be frightened, and another time he told him not to be dismayed. God doesn't just flap his lips to hear himself talk. He knew Joshua was afraid. There is no question that Joshua's mission was dangerous. There were battles that had to be waged and won, and many of his men would die in these battles. There was the Battle of Jericho, where the Israelites had to march around the city for 6 days, and on the seventh day, the army made a lot of noise and the walls fell down. They must have been scared to death on that seventh day. What if God didn't pull through? And then he led the Battle of Gibeon, where God made the sun stand still until the Israelites won the battle. They had to be scared to death that day, too. What would happen if God didn't come through and it was a total rout? Joshua would face the hazards of desert warfare. He would have to defeat the other nation's gods. He, like any other general of his time, would have led his army from the front and not the rear. Joshua needed God's assurances from the very beginning. Be strong, Joshua. Be courageous, Joshua. Do not be afraid, Joshua. And God today is giving us the same assurances. Be strong, Jackie. Be courageous, Jackie. Do not be afraid, Jackie. Now, I've read the Bible several times over, and I have never once read where God said, "Oh, go ahead and be afraid, because you know I'm not going to help you out anyway." I've never read that. Instead, I've read things like this: "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid?" Psalm 27:1. God did not give us a spirit of timidity, but of power and love and of self-discipline. 2 Timothy 1:7. "Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." Isaiah 41:10. The presence of courage does not mean the absence of fear. Courage is fear that has said its prayers. Courage is fear that holds on for just one more minute. Courage is the ability not to let people know how afraid you are inside. Courage is doing what you are afraid to do. The dictionary defines courage this way: the ability to face and deal with a dangerous or difficult situation. There's two parts: face it and deal with it. We've seen many who have faced and dealt with fears in our country. There are the young men who were drafted to fight in a war they didn't believe in, but they went anyway instead of bolting for Canada. There are the police who go out on their jobs every single day, even though there is a target on their backs. There are families dealing with serious illnesses. There's the widow who is looking at the last years of her life without her husband. People who walk through these dark valleys are courageous, even though their knees knock and their hearts skip beats and their stomachs do flip-flops. They are courageous because they go through their days trusting in the Lord. In the coming days, we are going to need courage, especially if the government keeps clamping down on Christian churches. We're going to need a double dose of courage if law and order is not restored to our nation's cities. The evils taking over our streets cannot be defeated without courage. Hiding under the bed isn't going to cut it. I'm not being critical of anybody because I'd like to run away too. We'd love to escape to Montana or Wyoming, but trouble will find us there too if the current state of violence is allowed to persist. But that's okay, because when I read my Bible, I read verses like this from Psalm 139, 7 through 10. Where shall I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you're there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. There is nowhere we can go where God is not also present. We should take courage. We should take heart, because God is ever present. To have courage is not to be absent with fear or anxiety, but to have a trust in God that is bigger than your fear. We need to trust God every day, because every day presents us with moments with which we will need great courage. And sometimes we need a little help from our friends. When I was a youth pastor in Wheaton, we took the kids to a waterfall once. And you know how kids are. They have no fear of death. So they're standing on the edge of the cliff, and one by one, they're jumping off into the pool below. And the cliff is about as high as this church roof is. And they're all bobbing around in the pool below, and I'm standing on the edge of the cliff, and I'm looking at them, and they're all going, jump, jump, jump. And I'm standing there, and I couldn't get my knees to unbend, and I could not screw the courage up to jump in. I was scared to death. I was literally paralyzed with fear. And suddenly, from behind me, a girl starts running. She grabs my hand and pulls me off with her into the pool below. I needed a little help from a friend to conquer my fear. We have a lot of cliffs to jump off today. If you need a little help from your friends, we're here. As the pastor of this church, I'm here. In fact, I've been here through the whole pandemic. I felt it was my sacred duty before God not to stay at home. I felt it was my sacred duty before God to be in this building and to be here for people who would need me, would need us. I'm not the only one who was here. The Davis family was here. In fact, when the governor ordered the lockdown in March, Stephen was the first one through the church doors and said, what are we going to do? How are we going to make this work? Stephen worked long and hard to get this thing to work. We're on Facebook Live every Sunday. You might be surprised to know that the audience that we have on Facebook Live is much bigger than who we have in the church building. Usually by the end of the week, we have about 87 to 100 views of our sermon online. We're here. And not only the Davises, but the band, Mike, Desi, Zeb, they come because they wanted to sing. They wanted to praise the Lord through song. They were here. We're here. We're not going anywhere. And then not only the band, but we had people, prayer warriors, who prayed at home. I see their faces today in the sanctuary. They were here. They were praying for you. They were praying for all of us. We won't pull you off the cliff. Well, try not to pull you off the cliff. But we will hold your hand, and we will tell you, don't be afraid. Fear not. We live in a time when the media says, be afraid. The government says, be afraid. Your friends and family say, ooh, be afraid. And some churches, to their shame and to my disgust, are telling their people, be afraid. In this time, as in all times, God is saying to you and to me, fear not, for I am with you. I will hold you with my righteous right hand. All you got to do is reach out your hand. And God's got you. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, help us to find our courage to walk through these last days. Help us, Lord, to spread that courage that comes from you to our friends and our neighbors, our family, and people who are deathly afraid. Help us, Lord, to encourage them and to instill in them your words, fear not.